This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest today is Michael Bappas, the managing director of Vios Advisors, the wealth management firm that is part of Rockefeller Capital Management. Vios Advisors specializes in working with high net worth individuals and families, preserving and optimizing their wealth for generations to come. As head of sports and entertainment for Vios Rockefeller Capital Management, Michael Bappas advises many of the world's leading professional athletes, entertainers, and executives. And you can see him regularly on business TV shows, giving his financial wisdom to all of us.
During these markets, when they're dominated by headlines, it's important to refocus on corporate earnings, which really surprised on the upside in the first quarter, and companies are flush with cash right now.
Let's head now to 45 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City and meet Michael Bappas on Sports Jam.
A lot of people see you on television, and people who really care about their money listen to what you have to tell them. And they also know that you have great taste in fashion. So it's one of the reasons I'm wearing a shirt and tie today, Michael, because I know sitting across from you, there's a little pressure on me. I couldn't wear my sports memorabilia stuff and really feel comfortable with you.
I like the combination. It works.
Okay, thanks. And coming from you, I'll accept that. Let's talk about first, you know, going through some of the information and in your background, one thing that really stood out to me right away is that 80% of NFL players go broke within the first 3 years of retirement, and 60% of NBA players file for bankruptcy within 5 years of retirement. Thus, you step in and start working with these athletes and individuals. But that's an alarming rate, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an alarming rate, not only for athletes, but for, I would take it a step further, people in general. But let's focus on the reason it happens with athletes. There are numerous factors that come into play, but take someone who is educated, is knowledgeable, is super, super dedicated to their sport, and give them millions of dollars in an 18-year-old clip at the age of 18, even that would be difficult for people to manage. So you have someone that's worked their whole life on one thing, and they've told everybody in the world that they're going to make it, and they've had twice as many people tell them they're not going to make it. So at that point, they finally feel like, okay, I'm here. Now I can do whatever I want. And it comes down to one thing. It comes down to surrounding yourself with the right advisors, with the right people, with people who are there for you and don't want anything from you. And I heard some interesting stories. Recently, we do a program where we work with Fordham. They have a program set up for professional athletes where they can get their MBA. It's an executive MBA. It's over 4 years. And we had some of them in the room, and they said something interesting to me. I want someone who has money and doesn't need me to make them rich. So that put it in a little bit of perspective for me, that they were around people who thought, okay, now that this guy made it or this lady made it, I'm going to make it too because they're going to make me rich. And friends come out of the woodworks. It just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And what we try to do is, okay, let's put a structure in place where we call it the arc of a career. We manage it through the arc of the career where initially we set up very conservatively, put a savings account together, put financial planning in place. And then as they make it through their career, then we do more sophisticated planning. And lastly, the day that they begin playing or the day they begin acting, let's say, what are you going to do in retirement? Because the longevity of sports is a 10 to 12-year career max, maybe 15 if you get lucky. Acting is a little bit longer, but it's a similar story. What's your retirement plan? And so getting that in their mind is an important part of what we do for the future.
We're going to talk about your athletic career here on Sports Jam, but when you were going through it, were you thinking about retirement and financial future?
No. I mean, look, I was nowhere near good enough to make it on the professional level, but that's our job as advisors to put that in their mind. Even if it doesn't resonate, at least it's back there. and if they'll trust us enough to manage the this part of their career for them and this part of their life for them, then we will ensure that that doesn't happen.
Many athletes work on branding themselves, but those are the top tier ones. So when you're working, you obviously have different levels of athletes that you have to deal with, right?
Correct. The top tier athletes, what the difference between them and let's say not as recognizable athletes is they just have more people coming at them. They have more people that want something from them, and they try to keep their circle even closer.
Let's go to Utah. Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about the athletic career of Michael Bappas. First of all, where did you learn how to play golf?
That's a good question. I learned at the Salt Lake Country Club or some of the local golfs. I played in Utah junior golf from the time I was 8 or 9 years old. It's a little bit different today than it was back then, but my parents would drop me off at the golf course, give me a few dollars for lunch and say, I'll be back later. And so, you know, I would just meet some friends there, walk around, chip, putt, hit balls, play golf. And, you know, it's amazing to me now, looking back, there were no cell phones and I would always have a quarter in my bag in case I needed to call somebody. And then I would just wait for my parents to pick me up. So we really didn't have anything else. That's what we did. And when we were playing in the yard, we were playing something.
You got good enough to play at the University of Utah. So obviously, just dropping you off turned out to be more than that. You really worked on your game. What were you good at?
Any time you play something at a high level, it takes work. And I spent a lot of time. I was lucky enough to have met Jim Flick and spend time with him. He was one of my earlier mentors in life, I would say. Rest his soul. I will always remember. He was the guy in my life that said, hey, you got to do some of these things. This is what you got to do. I'm going to help you if you do this. I remember to him, I said to him one time, you know, what do you think of cross-handed putting or low hand putting, because at the time people were going back and forth. It's before all the unique putting strokes people have today. And he says, he called everyone coach. He goes, coach, you want to be a better putter? And I said, yeah. He goes, well, there's your answer. So, you know, stuff like that I remember. But it's just like anything that you do in life. Spending time on the right practice, doing the right things is what gets you to that point.
What's interesting is that we know that people in power love to play golf, and that is really just like another office. If you're a good golfer, you can impress, and they really want to talk to you. So little did your parents know, they set you up well for a career that you're now involved in.
Correct. I mean, it's amazing how much, you hear the cliche, but how much gets done on a golf course. And as frustrating as it is that I'll never be as good as I was, I do it for enjoyment now, but also work. You know, you spend 4 or 5 hours with someone on the golf course. You learn his or her character. You learn what's important to them, and it becomes something that I do for fun and for work.
I obviously can tell by not only listening to you but knowing your background that you are a very competitive person. Playing basketball at American College of Greece back in the mid-90s, playing golf at the University of Utah. Now in your position now, you have to be competitive and those competitive juices flow. So where did that start for you, knowing that you have to really drive to have success? There are vultures out there in every business, and you have to fend them off here in your career now. So where did that all start?
Look, I think it started with my parents. I grew up in a very traditional Greek household. My dad was, you know, my grandfather immigrated from Greece at the age of 14, worked in the mines. My mom's side was all farmers. And I think it starts, you know, it starts at home, starts with the parents. And then, you know, just them pushing me to continue to do better and continue to do something better than what they did and put me in position to have the opportunity to be able to do that.
Do you think because of your athletic background that has given you an advantage when you're talking to these athletes? You've at least gone through, you know, the workouts and the mindsets and everything that they've had in their career. Do they respect you more because of that?
I don't know if they respect me more, but it makes it more real from my side to them. And I think understanding what it takes to get to the collegiate level, let alone the professional level, it's very similar. As we all hear, and as sports fans all know, the difference from playing in college and playing professionally is very, very slim margin, but it's huge. You know, it's sort of a catch-22 there. But in golf, for example, I don't know the exact numbers, so don't quote me on the numbers, but it's like a half a stroke difference between the top player in the world and the 125th player or the person that's not even on the tour. And so you're talking about minimal. Same thing in swimming. It's a little bit more easy to define in sports that have scores in swimming. That, you know, you got to touch the ball in this amount of time. You got to shoot 66 4 days straight. You know, in basketball, baseball, some of these other sports, soccer, it's a little bit harder to define what the difference is, but it's a very small margin. I mean, and ironically, most of our team members or at least a portion of our team members have played competitive sports. And so I think that helps you in the business world. And I try to encourage my kids to play sports because you learn about discipline, you learn about meeting deadlines, you learn about teamwork, you learn about not letting your team down. You learn about doing something at a little bit higher level to increase the level of the team. How many times have you heard the phrase, you can have a lot of good individuals, but you may not win until you have a team?
Two daughters, right?
Two daughters, yep.
So we're going to talk about them before we finish this edition of Sports Jam. But you said something that reminded me of a past guest here on Sports Jam, the actor Jim Caviezel, who actually played college basketball and was pretty good, but he played up against John Stockton and kind of got scorched. And at that point, he realized he wasn't going to be able to make it as a professional. Did that moment ever happen for you when you go, yep, I'm not going to be a professional golfer and I'm not going to play in college hoops?
Yeah, it happened to me in both golf and basketball. I was a little bit of a confused athlete, but it happened to me in golf when I tried to, you know, I was working for Jim Flick in Phoenix with his golf schools, and I was trying to play, and I remember it was the time when I forgot the guy's name, Dempsey. He was a really good player for Arizona State. I forget his first name, but maybe you can advise me on that later on. But he goes out and comes to Desert Mountain and he shoots 60 in a tournament on the golf course that was supposed to be the hardest course there. And I thought to myself, well, it's over for me now. And you know, in basketball, I could have played in Greece, had a 10-year career, but I know I would never get further than that. So I just, you know, at that point, I decided let me go into the business world.
Next, let's take a look at the bigger picture. Michael Bappas is here. He's received recognition from Barron's, also Forbes, among others.
And what a success you've been in the business world. We're speaking with Michael Bappas. He is the managing director of IOS Advisors, the wealth management firm that's part of Rockefeller Capital Management, our guest on Sports Jam. You know, people, their entire lives depend on some of these comments that you make on all these shows that you're on. Does that give you extra pressure knowing that, hey, I'm going to, Michael said this, there goes my money?
Look, I don't know if it gives you extra pressure, but it makes me always want to put thought into what I say. And I think it's important to realize that everything I say impacts somebody in some way, especially when it's on a on a national, you know, publication, broadcast, whatever, similar to what we're doing today. So it's just a matter of, I think I would not say it's pressure, but it's always trying to say and do the right things that people will benefit from in some way.
You mentioned the word impact. Without obviously telling us who it might be, give us a story of an athlete who really has been impacted by your presence and your knowledge, that they've been able to really maybe turn their whole, you know, focus around and whole wealth around.
There's one in particular. He came from, you know, a basketball player, very, very rough upbringing, and sort of had everybody coming at him, got pulled in the wrong direction a few times. And to his credit, he just, you know, we started working with him. He had a few different advisors. To his credit, he just said, look, you're my guy now, and I'm trusting you. I don't trust anybody. And it worked for him. And so it gives us satisfaction in the fact that he has plenty of money in the bank. And he really, in the beginning of his career, there were a lot of people that did a lot of bad things to him. And so it also takes the athlete or the individual to be able to say, okay, I gotta go with this person and I trust him.
That's a key word, trust. How do you build trust with somebody like that, who may have come from a very different background than you?
Very good question. I ask myself that every day. I think it's part of our lives. It's part of what we as human beings do in everything we do. I mean, how do you trust that you're going to come here and I'm going to do the right thing on your show? I think it's sticking to values. Sounds corny, but in our world today, we get away from the core values that we probably should as a society. Stick to values, but do what you say you're going to do. How many people that are out there or that you've heard before that don't follow up? I tell, you know, we talk about that all the time on our team. If you tell someone you're going to do it, do it. If you say you're going to send the email, send the email. If you say you're going to follow up. And I think trusting that you will do what you say you're going to do starts to create that bond. And then it's just all about human interaction.
More than ever, sports has become a global thing, not only to look at the teams, but to look at the players, where they come from, international markets. You pay attention to that all. What advice do you have for your athletes and just people in general about international investing? And the world's a little bit in a very shaky position right now. A lot of people are on edge. What kind of advice do you have?
We are in more of a global economy now than ever. Technology has changed the way we live forever. And I always say, I wish I could come back for like a week in 300 years and just see what this 60 years in our lifetime, how it changed the world, positively, negatively, whatever you want to say. But we are living in a historic time because of technology. So to take it to the question about international investing and what's going on in the globe, it's hard to, because of technology, it's hard to rid yourself of all the noise, because there's a lot more noise than there ever has been. And what we continue to try to do is stick to the fundamentals. And what is fundamentals? Well, what are we investing in? And whether there's a deal with China or not, it won't affect it in 3 years. Because there's always going to be something out there. The tariffs, China, election is all right now. Well, if you look back 5 years ago, it was the same thing in a different time period. It was similar. There's always those distractions. So I think it's taking the noise, ridding yourself of it, and saying, okay, what is this good company? Is this a good investment? Is this a good strategy? And why? And that the non-fundamental noise that's out there, that will always be out there, as much as you can rid yourself of that, we tell our investors and try to stick to the goal, stick to the long term, similar to sports. What's our goal? I mean, how many times you see people that win the championship, we had one goal. I remember a friend of mine was playing on the Miami Heat when they back with in I think it was 06. When did they beat Dallas? 06, 07. And their motto was 15 strong to get to the championship. All 15 guys on the team made a difference, and they had one goal in mind. And you hear that with every team, but I think it's similar in our business to say stick to the goals. What's your goal? What's your long-term time horizon? And don't worry about all the other stuff.
I'm smiling because I'm hearing you just like I see you on TV, where the hosts are going, the whole world's coming to an end. The whole world's coming to an end. The whole world's coming to an end. Michael, do you agree? And then you kind of bring it back into perspective.
Yeah. I mean, look, part of what we do is try to help people keep perspective. And we have to do it ourselves, too. We went through probably the worst market in the history, or the top two worst markets in history in 2008. And the only way you get through something like that is keep perspective. And I, you know, I try to, it's hard sometimes, but I try to do that with myself, with our team, with our clients, and the grounded perspective that we all try to keep helps us get through those difficult noises and times.
What are the conversations like with you and your daughters right now? Do you talk about finance? Do you talk about what dad does at work? I mean, obviously they're old enough now. They understand, you know, your role, but do you have those conversations, or is it more just the fatherly advice?
I start to have those conversations. I mean, they know what I do. They see me on TV, et cetera. But what I try to tell them is, you know, something as simple as, okay, what's your plan for this money, or what's your plan for studying, or what's your plan for sports? But what I always just tell them and about business, sports, whatever it is, if you're going to do it, go make a difference. So if they're playing, you know, they both play soccer, and I always say, you know, not good luck, any of that, what does that mean? But I try to say, you know, make a difference. And so I relate that to what they're doing and to what I try to do for our business.
Is it hard for you? They pick soccer and you were golf and basketball. So maybe you can't help so much when it comes to practice. Does that matter to you?
No, it doesn't matter. I always say to them, you guys do whatever you want. Be involved in something. And I say, you know, whether it's debate, whether it's science, whether it's sports. I mean, they play numerous sports, and we live in a town where sports is possibly more important than school, but I say that facetiously, but I want them to be involved in something. Make it a passion. Make it, and when you're out there, do the best. It doesn't have to be sports. I really don't, you know, they play basketball, they play golf, they play, you know, but I want to make it about them and not about me. And I think that's probably one of the most important components to them being able to make a difference.
You made a point of looking back and saying, you know, 60 years and how it will all look. So let me ask you this. If you could go back in time in the Wayback Machine and you have an opportunity to spend a day with an athlete, not necessarily to talk about financial advice, but really just to maybe spend a day on the golf course, they don't have to be a golfer, who would be that one athlete that you would pick to spend the day with?
Two people come to mind. Michael Jordan and Derek Jeter. I think they are two of the best to ever play their sports, if not, you know, the best. And I just admire how they made everybody around them better.
Well, the script is there. The last page is in Derek's hands. Meek deals. Base hit to right field. Here comes Richardson. Here's the throw from Markakis. Richardson is safe. Derek Jeter ends his final game with a walk-off single. Derek Jeter, where fantasy becomes reality. Did you have any doubt?
You look at the teams that they played on, and you look at the leadership skills that they had. They made everybody on those teams better. For example, Jordan, those components, and I remember sitting, I was at the game when they beat the Jazz when he made that shot, and he broke my heart.
17 seconds from game 7 or from championship number 6. Jordan open. Chicago with the lead.
And he broke our whole Salt Lake City's heart, but the admiration you have for someone that he can continually do that over and over, or she can continue to do that over and over, I think that's the skill that I admire most from them, and their competitiveness. I mean, just the fire that drives them every day is something that I admire.
What is it about Salt Lake City that the average person might not know that you want to take some pride in the fact that that's where you grew up?
I think people know it now. When I was growing up, nobody knew Salt Lake City. Nobody went skiing there. Nobody cared about it. That's a tough question to answer. You know, it's a good family place to grow up, and it's hard, you know, hardworking people. And I think pretty much everyone knows about it. But it's much different. And you give the Olympics really sort of put it on the map. It was right after September 11th. It was, people took pride in America at that time, as much as any time in my life. And I think the town and the city as a whole really embraced the Olympics. I think it might not be today, but at the time it was the most profitable Olympics that was ever put on.
Tonight, a parade of nations has assembled on a mountainside in Utah to make real these self-evident truths. That what unites us can be far greater than what divides us. And that we are beaten only when we stop believing in what we wish we can be. The flame that is lit tonight is not like any other. It is not the fire of destruction, but a light in the darkness.
Since you brought it up, what were you doing 9/11?
Well, I still get chills talking about it, but when I first moved to New York, I worked in Two World Trade because I was at Morgan Stanley, and that was, obviously everybody knows, that was one of their headquarters. But so I was on the 74th floor when for the first 2.5 years I was in business. I happened to be in Salt Lake City on that day. I remember sitting in my office, and one of my friends called me, and he said, "Are you watching TV?" You know, and I was like, "Yeah." What, you know, and obviously everybody knows what happened after that. But it was something that, especially knowing that we had so many people in that building, and I was in that building, and that's where I started my career on Wall Street. It's always something that we should remember as a society, and I think it's more impactful, or it affected people in a different way who live in New York or who had a connection to New York. And I think, you know, that's something that you see we need to go back to in politics, where there was a lot of bipartisan feel, which is exactly the opposite right now in today's world. But that's what I remember about it mostly.
Being a former athlete, you know that a lot of athletes today get very involved in their community, and philanthropy has been a big part of your life, and giving back. Was that instilled early on by your parents and the importance? And if you want to talk about some of the things you're involved in?
Yeah, that was definitely instilled early on from my parents. I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I can give back, and I think I will always do that. My parents were always involved in philanthropy. I joke with my mom and dad today. I'm like, "You guys are doing too much. Why don't you go travel? Why don't you go to Europe? What are you guys wasting your time for all this for?" But that's sort of, you know, that's what the way we grew up. I'm involved in the Greek Orthodox Church, you know, the whole heritage, the religious side of it. I do a lot for, there's an organization called Leadership 100. It's the largest endowment In the Greek Orthodox Church, I'm also involved in the Ronald McDonald House in New York, and I think it's having a place for kids who are going through cancer to stay, for the families to stay that couldn't afford it. Those are my two main charitable, where I spend most of my time on my charities and philanthropy.
Just a few more questions.
Yeah.
Best advice mom ever gave you?
Best advice mom ever gave me? She gave me a lot of advice on a lot of stuff, and she was always the person that was there for me. I'll give you I have two components to that question. The first one is she always used to say, address the issue now, because the longer you extend it, and she calls it the extended lie, the longer you extend the issue by just kicking the can down the road or pushing it out, the harder it is going to be to address at that time. But I would say the number one thing is just go with your gut. Whatever it is, just go with it, because usually it's right. And you know that cliche, first impressions, it's usually right. And a lot of us have, you know, as a society, you know, go back and forth on what we should choose. Just go with your initial instinct. And I think that's probably the... And you always have to have good grammar. She was an English teacher, so she instilled writing and grammar, and I torture my team, the people on my team who work with us here in the office, about grammar and about emails and all that. But I think it separates you from others out there that are doing the same thing you're doing.
Great advice, go with your gut. Doesn't always work for coaches, especially if you're the LA Dodgers manager last night, going with your gut with the bullpen. But it is great advice. Now, the fact that
I feel sorry for Clayton Kershaw. I really do. That poor guy, I saw it this morning that he said he's not going to get over it. It's just one of those things that you really empathize with the guy. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, but there's something that has not gotten him to the point where he can get over that. And that goes back to Jeter and Jordan. I mean, those guys, I remember hearing Jeter tell a story that when he first went to the minor leagues and he said he thinks he should quit. He said, I was on like a 1-for-40 streak, 0-for-40 streak. He said, I was so devastated. I thought maybe this isn't for me. And for a guy like that to say that, lets everybody know there's always ups and downs in life. There's always difficult times, and that's where you try to get through it and learn from the mistakes. I mean, I think the what's that phrase that Jordan says, that I've missed, there's a commercial about it, I've missed X thousand shots in my life. I've missed, you know, game winners, X amount of game winners. But what drives me is learning from those mistakes. And when I make the game winner, no one's going to remember that I missed it. And Jeter said, he says, they asked him, what do you think about when you got your 3,000th hit? He said, I thought, yeah, it's pretty good, but I also made 7,000 outs. So, you know, it's that continual drive to being the best that I admire about them, and where you really empathize with someone like Kershaw.
Working with athletes, you really do get a different perspective from them. What don't we know about today's athlete? You know, a lot of people can't relate. They make a lot of money, and when they're complaining, they're going, boy, I'd like to be that guy that sits on the bench every night, never gets in, and makes several million dollars.
I think you could use that analogy for CEOs, for actors, for the top of any industry, any trade, anything that, because, you know, if it's whatever the industry is, service, hotels, restaurants, athletes, entertainment, the hardest thing that athletes have to deal with is how many people want something from them. And it's the same in you know, if you're the best at what you're doing, there's always going to be people that are, my dad used to call them bloodsuckers. They want something from you, and they're always going to be hanging on you. And that's probably the most difficult part, because people that you trusted at some point in your life aren't the people that you thought they were, and that is when it comes out.
Last question I have for you then here on Sports Jam is, let's go back to, you talked about Fordham has a program. Obviously, there seems to be a great need, maybe even at the high school level, to get these athletes to know about finance, because sometimes it seems like it's too late before they know what to do.
Look, you bring up a great point, and I'm glad you brought that up. Education is key for them, and I think part of why I'm doing what I'm doing is just to educate people. You know, I mean, anything that, and again, it goes back to my mom, anything can be solved with educating. And the more you learn about something, the more you understand it, the more you can help solve it. And so the Jack Brewer, who's the former NFL player who is the leader of this program, he said to me the other day, we got to get these kids when they're in high school, because it might be too late once they get to the professional level. And I think it's also, but you take the flip side of it, most of the guys in the program, and there's a few females, they're young. They're between, 28 and 40, and they're getting their education, and they have their whole lives ahead of them. So there is a side to it in high school, but there's also a side to it. Now's the time to do it. Whenever that time is, do it now. Educate yourself now. And I think that's where this program is really going to benefit the sports world and the entertainment world.
There's that phrase, look good, feel good. He looks good. He feels good. He is good. He's Michael Bappas. And Michael, thanks for joining us on Sports Jam.
Doug, I really appreciate it. It's been fun. I commend you for what you do, and I'd love to do this again in the future. So thank you.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the past shows by going to WBGO.org/Sports Jam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts. Special thanks going out to the Yes Network's Michael Kay for his iconic call of Derek Jeter's last hit at Yankee Stadium, and the legendary Bob Costas with his calls on NBC. Bob Costas, a former guest here on Sports Jam. Plus, a big thanks to our good buddy Joe Favorito. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.